So here we go then with another episode of The Change Show with Simon Phillips. I hope we've had a fantastic week. I want to introduce you to my really special guest. I've enjoyed getting to know him over the last week or two as he was introduced to me. And I'm just so excited to hear what he's got to say about some of the things that we normally talk about here on The Change Show. So please welcome Danny Creed. Danny, lovely to meet you.
Thank you, Simon. It's really nice to be here. I've listened to the show, and so thank you.
Ah, excellent. Danny, what we like to do is just find out a little bit more about you. So for the listeners, for the people tuning in, maybe they're watching this on video at some stage, let us know a little bit about you, your history, and how did you get here with the unfortunate job of talking to me?
Well, the short life history of myself is I was born and raised on a farm, a wheat farm in the state of Kansas, in America, a town of 100 people. I had 16 kids in my senior class. I had 5 girls and 4 of them were cousins. So there you go. My family's lived on the farm for 130 some years. I'm the only member of the farm to leave because I just couldn't see myself doing that. They're still there. I walked into a radio station, spent almost 20 years in broadcast, really learning creativity and sales, and just, it was just so much fun. Late 80s, I was invited to be a part of an entrepreneurial startup. Mm-hmm. And that was back when we really didn't yet know how to spell entrepreneur. And it was just like, wow, this is great. The excitement and the risk and just the creativity that went into that. And we did really well with that. And one thing led to another. Fast forward, I've done 14 startups. I've got another 15th rolling. We did really well. We had bootstrap startups, really basic, you know, a telephone and a table, and that was it. I worked with some really massive startups where I was a principal working with very large multinational companies, but we did it with the idea of a startup. I really believe, Simon, that any business today should be, the owner should consider themselves an entrepreneur. Things are just moving so fast. And if you do it the way you've always done it and people before you've always done it, you're going to be out of business. Yeah. You know, you have to your theme today, you have to learn to change. And if you're not adaptive to everything that's going on, you know, this is the way my family has always done it. This is the way the corporation's always done it, and we're going to keep doing it. Well, you'll be out of business. Do you know that, you know, I don't want to get off subject, but you know that of all the businesses started this year, I think the number now is 92% of them will be out of business in, I think, 5 years is what it says. Why is that? A lot of it's because people don't want to change.
Yeah.
You know, they don't want to adapt. So I did all these startups, and at one point I was traveling 220 nights a year. I had a bad back because I was sleeping in a different bed every night. Yeah. And a good friend of mine and a mentor was Brian Tracy, the famous personal and business development guru. And as well as I was lucky, the Campbell Frazier, which is another famous coach, and Zig Ziglar and some people like that. I had some angels that kind of took me in and taught me. And I said, you know, I need to take all this collective knowledge of doing startups and what I call some street fighting experience of running a business and starting a business and sales and marketing and psychology and how you think. And I wanted to share that with, you know, in my attitude was always people would say, I want to be the pebble in the pond. I wanted to take it a little farther. I wanted to be the tsunami in the ocean. You know, I wanted to take this knowledge and really help people because I saw so many people that were failing for reasons that didn't need to happen. You know, they were failing because they wouldn't adapt. They failed because they wouldn't change. They failing because they didn't understand leadership. You know, all those things. So again, one thing led to another, and I did a lot of research, and I became a business coach, partnering with Brian Tracy, and let's fast forward. That was almost, I'm just finishing my 15th year as a master business coach. And I base my practice off of what I call real world coaching, which is, you know, all the theory is good, but man, you've got to be out in the battlefield and get bloody. And that's the difference between me and some coaches, and that I've made the mistakes. I've also been successful. And so I can help a business owner understand those mistakes. So what I do is I say I help business owners, large and small, achieve their goals faster than they could ever do on their own. Mm. And I work with a company that owns 3 shoe stores, and I work with a $3 billion financial services company. So I work with people right now in 12 countries, you know, because, you know, the world's pretty small. And they all share the same problems. You know, they all have the same issues, as I'm sure you know. So that's kind of how I got to where I'm at. I'm starting my 16th year in January, and I just love what I do.
Now, you were introduced to me by Chris, weren't you, Chris Sevalera, on the yes. platform here. Now, I understand you and he have done quite a number of podcasts together and shows over the years. So what's the best question he ever asked you?
Oh, man. I'd have to think about that. I think probably in some way, because we've done so many, I think it was probably what was the biggest lesson or biggest mistake you've ever made through all the startups and everything. And, you know, my answer to that is pretty simple, because I think it's a different pandemic in the business world today, in that nobody knows how to listen. Mm. For the most part, leadership out there, they're learning, but I think listening, the art of listening is a lost art in worldwide business. I believe that if you just shut up and listen a little bit, that people, employees, partners, companies that you're dealing with, negotiating with, will tell you exactly what they want if you just shut up and listen. And I think that's something that's lost out there, because I just read the I'm not sure whether it's the national or the international attention span now is down to 7 seconds. Why?
Sorry, did you say something?
Well, because a lot of it's because of this that we're
absolutely.
But
mobile phones, just to, you know, they, especially when the notifications happen, you can be in the middle of conversation. It will just interrupt, and it's.
I work with CEOs that I'm talking, and they go, "Yeah."
Mm.
You know, they just fade away. Look, if people want to feel like you're listening, now I'm kind of bringing this back to leadership and change and everything else. And part of change in today's world is just understanding what's going on. Listen, you know, and I think that's one of the things that we've had Chris and I have had a number of conversations on. It's just, you know, what you can get out of listening. It's so important because, and again, I would tell any of your listeners out there that might be listening to this, if you just work on that one skill, and I call it a skill, that your life will change. Your life will simply change. Instead of, I call it moving from the tell side to the ask side.
Yeah.
Instead of, go do this, you could move to, Simon, you know, we kind of need this done. Let's talk about getting that done.
Yeah,
it just changes everything. But that's a great question. But I think that's one of the topics we've talked a lot about.
Yeah, magic. And you were talking there about communication. And before we came on air, we were talking about our mutual love of things like the DISC model and the insights and the Clarity 4D models, where it's literally about different energies that people bring to and their preferences when they're communicating with people. And actually the biggest lesson, in fact, the only lesson we would want them to take away from any sessions is, how can I flex so that I can communicate more effectively with the person in front of me? Whereas most people just bring their own preferences to every conversation and wonder why they're misfiring, you know, maybe three times out of four. So, you know, communication is the, is a, every survey, yeah, every review of a project, it's always been, oh, it was the communication that let us down. I mean, how can you set that up as a leader so that everybody gets it straight away?
Well, you know, again, I always start with listening. I mean, and again, a lot of leaders, if I may take a moment and tell you some and share with you some of my thoughts on how leadership has changed since the pandemic has happened. That'd you know, prior to the worldwide pandemic, I mean, a lot of leaders would, and we talked about this a little last time we talked, we spoke, a lot of leaders, their form of leadership was, you know, it's not a democracy, you know, it's a kingdom and it's good to be the king, you know, that they would lead by walking down the hall and yelling at people and intimidating people and getting in their face and telling them this is what we're going to do or else. And that's why a lot of leaders, and I've worked with, again, with small startups to great big companies, billion-dollar companies. And that was true all the way across. And if you're listening to this and it's you, I'm sorry, but you're a dinosaur today because what the pandemic has done when people went home is people have realized I don't have to put up with that person anymore. What we have is managers and leaders that could care less. They didn't adapt to, and the word I like to use is adapt to who they were dealing with. They didn't learn how to do that. So that is one thing that I always work with leaders on is how do we learn to identify who I'm dealing with from a personality profile? And then how do they want to be spoken to? How do they want to be asked? I mean, before we went on the air, I'm sharing that one of the key elements is certain words. I mean, I won't allow my clients to use the word why, why, because every one of the personality profiles will take that word differently.
Yeah.
You gave a, you know, I don't know whether you want to share your example, but you know, I could say to a high aggressive personality, why? And they'd take it as let's fight. And I didn't mean it by that at all. So they have to learn to adapt to the setting and the people. Now that also means that they have to be a good listener, what's going on. And number three, that means that they have, you know, Sam Walton, who founded the Walmart gazillion dollar chain, he used to say that one of the three things that made that company great was his philosophy of managing by wandering around.
Yeah.
Which meant the philosophy was I want my managers to find people doing something right, which is completely different still to this day in most businesses, because when they see the boss coming, they hide. So what we've found, and we've done this with highly success this year, is that particularly when people were sent home, I have one client that sent 5,000 people home.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden their managers, you know, the big bullish people are going, what do we do? You know, we can yell and holler now and there's nobody there to yell and holler at. And when we try to do it on a Zoom call, they just shut it off. So the key is being a good listener, and the key is clarity. And most people have no clarity on anything. I call it a form of operational excellence. There was a guy, and I just pulled it up. There was a guy, a gentleman, he's a Wharton professor, who just yesterday came out and said, look, employees are waiting to see whether companies will change or whether they'll revert to pre-pandemic attitudes on mental health, in-office work, in management. You know, they're waiting to see. So what I believe is that, and we can track this, is that people have changed. That with the fear of what might happen with a pandemic, with politics, with what's going on in the world and everything else, that people have become more fearful of everything. And if you hear about the great resignation, you know, that's going on around the world, people are just going, ah, the heck with it. You know, I don't have to put up with this stuff, you know? So what we really find is that, and we had a growth. We had this one company where we sent 5,000 people home and everybody panicked. But what we found by working on clarity and relaxing a little bit and listening closely, in the first 8 months last year, we improved productivity by 80%.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
You know, and that came because instead of going, you're going to get this project done, you're going to get it done, now the managers are saying, look, I don't care when you work. If you want to go bowling or go for a hike with your kids, I don't care. But I have to have the project done by Monday morning at 8:00.
Yeah. And what that does is it gives the person receiving that message a degree of autonomy. It treats them like an adult. I mean, this is the thing that I always talk about with managers and leaders that are maybe they've self-identified as being a micromanager.
Absolutely.
And you know, when we look at it in a slightly different way and we say, look, these people that you're leading, they have mortgages. They have complex human relationships to deal with at home. They have caring responsibilities maybe for people around them. They have to bring kids up with all of their mixed emotions and everything that's going on for them.
That's right.
Incredible. Everybody outside of work deals with complexity, deals with major life decisions. And then they come into a work environment in our teams, and we treat them as if they, you know, they've just come out of school. And, you know, the point there for a micromanaging leader is, as you say, take a rest, you know, agree things between you and get some of the, you know, get some input from them as to what they, how they're going to organize their work. Because how they actually do it is irrelevant. It's what they produce at the end of it is all I'm interested in as a leader.
I'd like to, if I can, real quickly share two things that I think real important to that. Through all of this, and by the way, I'm living proof that some of the things we're talking about today work, and you can give a lot of examples. Last year, I'm very proud of this. Last year, in the worst pandemic year, you know, starting in March, for the year, 100% of my clients had growth, while the rest of the world was going, you know, we had growth. And one of the, there's two of the reasons why we did was we coached almost every conversation on mindset. Where's your head at? And then we coached on clarity. And let's start with clarity. I have a tool that I use that is called What Does Good Look Like? And I don't know whether I can make it available to you, Simon. You can share with your listeners. Mm. But the question starts with what does good look like? And it's based on the concept of accountability. To have accountability, you have to have a consequence.
Yeah.
But to have a consequence, you have to have accountability. And a lot of leaders in the past would have consequences. I'm going to fire you if you don't get this done. And there was no account. People go, okay, but what do you want me to get done? So, you know, without one, the other one can't exist. So if you break that down, then accountability, to have accountability, you have to have clarity, you know, and to have clarity, level two, you have to have metrics of some sort. Mm. So what does good look like? And metrics are results, their goals, expectations, goals. Difference between average and great, and really understand those things. Metrics define accountability. And again, when I work with people on goals, I'm working with three executives right now on goals. And these guys are very successful people. And yesterday, and my purpose, I mean, this is all confidential and one-on-one with them, but these guys couldn't give me the clarity of their goals. And I'm sitting here going, I love you, man, but I don't know what that means. So are you doing these goals for me or are you doing them for you? But once that happens, Simon, I always say manna from heaven just falls out of the sky because you open up the radio waves of absolute clarity on what you want to happen, right? Mm-hmm. So again, accountability equals clarity, clarity equals metrics. Metrics are very specific things and they define accountability. Now with accountability defined then, we now know what good looks like. So you can hold people accountable. That's what I did with this one company. And we just absolutely clarified. So even the weakest link in their chain of employees would go, okay, I know exactly what's expected of me. And you eliminate excuses, you let me know. So a good leader then could do nothing more than take the sheet of what they agreed to and just go, just point at it.
Yeah.
Here's what we agreed to. So you eliminate all the arguments. So now and only now, once we went through that, we can have a consequence. I mean, you know, as well as I do, and your listeners will probably know this too, that you've got reprimanded or fired or challenged on things that you really didn't know why it was happening, right? Or as a manager, you had people argue with you and they could argue with you just because you didn't know exactly why you're upset. They're just doing something you don't like. So the second piece of that is in mindset. And I believe there's two types of mindsets. One is survival mindset, in which we have a lot of people moved to that survival mindset today. And the other part is possibility mindset. And you don't have to be highly successful or anything to have a possibility mindset, but it's the difference is, oh, it looks like it's going to be a terribly bad weather day to, oh, it's cloudy. I can still get my work done. You know, it's just a mindset, but you know, I can judge as a leader, I can judge what that leader's mentality is just by saying, hey, Simon, how you doing?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm getting by. We'll make it work. I can just tell if they're in a survival mode. And I'm telling you, in today's world for leaders and change, making change happen, you can't live in a survival mode because that mentality, that mindset attitude can be seen, can be heard, can be felt. Employees can smell it.
Yeah.
You know, if you're afraid, and I'm telling you right now that there's so many people who have moved over to the side of mindset where they're going, I don't know what to do. So I'm going to watch my leader that I report to. I'm going to see what their mindset is, and then I'll reflect that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you've got a lot of people sitting there going, watching, waiting to be told how to think.
Yeah.
And so if somebody comes in with a terrible attitude, a nasty attitude, a survival attitude, guess what your team is going to act like? I mean, when I was doing my startups, I swear if I was on the phone talking and I came in the morning and I'm talking and I'm, you know, got my serious face on, and that by the time I got to my office, I'd have five people at my door going, boss, what's wrong? Is it okay? Because I always tried to be very positive and, you know, and moving forward. So look, change management starts with leadership attitude. The old school mindset is of, you know, to just bully everybody. And the new world is flexibility. You know, it's about expectations and visions and collaborations and accountability. You know, it's about holding the accountability part again. But again, if you think about what does good look like piece, you can't have accountability unless you have clarity on what you're holding people accountable for.
Yeah.
Or in turn, what you're being held accountable for. So I'm pretty passionate about this. If you can't tell, I love this. So I've seen so many lives change.
I was wondering there if you felt any belief or anything that you were saying.
I'll take a deep breath.
But it is it, the bit that struck me in there was the need for congruence.
Yes.
You know, as you said, there's no point saying to people how you'd like them to behave if your own actions are incongruent with that. And what's the old saying? I can't hear a word you're saying because your actions are too loud.
Yeah, that's
so true with many people who are, you know, and let's be fair here. A lot of people get put into positions of management and leadership with no training, with no development, with no opportunities to have even seen a good leader in their past. And so they're learning as they go, and sometimes they're getting it wrong. And I think people around you in that environment know that you're developing, and they're willing to give you the benefit of the doubt and work with you if you're transparent about it. But if you go about it in a way that says, right, here's the four things I need to do. Right, okay, over to you. And these four things. And you know, if you're not doing it in a way that enables the other people to come with you on that journey and learn with you on that journey, then you know, it totally lacks congruence.
Well, I think you're exactly right. You have to include them in today's world, or understand their what their world is, you know, and that simply, again, for those listening, I don't want to seem trite, but I've worked, like I said, with billion-dollar companies, and my advice to their executives that worked, by the way, these are people that sometimes went through all the big fancy consultants and it didn't work, was to shut up and listen. You know, ask your clients. When we had that dramatic growth, and again, we found growth. I'll just share with you one of the things we did last year when the pandemic hit here in March last year. I went out to every one of my clients, my one-on-one clients, big and small, and I said, look, I want you to know that I acknowledge how terrible this is and what could happen. I acknowledge that, but I'm not leaving your business today until we come up with two possibilities to improve ourselves through this.
Yeah.
You know, and some of them said, well, I'll just lock the door. And I said, yeah, I'll sleep on the sidewalk, you know, but we're going to come up with two possibilities. And once, Simon, I got these people to think about possibilities rather than, I say that a lot of them were so worried, it was running their lives about what if versus what is. And what is was that their loyal clients were still going to need their services.
Yep.
So if you're not there to provide those services because you're in a hole hiding, where are they going to go? Well, if your mindset is right, they're going to go somewhere with a less superior product and get not as good service, get not as good of a product. So in a way, if you're not there to figure out how to serve your people, you're doing them a disservice. And in today's world, you will probably lose that client.
Yeah.
You know, so we sat down and I really made them, I listened closely to their fears. But then what we did was, okay, let's come up with at least two possibilities. Because if you go back in the world when pandemics and economic downturns, the worst that had ever happened, I think you'll find across the board that there were also, the hidden fact was, there were more millionaires made during that time than ever before. I know in the great stock market crash here in the States in 2008, it was true, and the great stock market crash in the 20s and all through there were always more millionaires made during, because somebody said, there's some potential here.
Yeah.
There's some possibility here. And so I think your listeners should really focus on what is, what do I have in front of me and how can I develop that? What do my clients want? Because we saw worldwide that the people that are thriving today are ones that didn't put a Band-Aid on when the pandemic hit. They sat back and they said, how can we improve, how can we deal with this pandemic and improve ourselves so that when it is over, we've got a better company, right? And that, what kind of mindset is that? Well, that's a possibility mindset. And the ones who did or came out with things, if you look at innovation now, there's more innovation in the world than ever before.
Yeah.
I mean, technology is just going nuts. I mean, look at, for instance, and this is an ad, I guess, but look at what Zoom has done. It's changed the world.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a matter of, it all starts. It's more than a trickle. It's a waterfall from the top. And even if it's not a top, your line managers, your floor managers, they better have a positive attitude. They better have a possibility attitude, looking for better ways to serve people, or you're going to be out of business.
Awesome. I love that concept. Danny, is there a specific aspect of your work that you'd like to talk about? So the leader, the listeners at home have got a good insight into how you specifically help organizations.
Yeah, it's kind of a, now that you asked the question, Simon, it's pretty amazing, I think. I mean, that's one of the reasons I do what I do and have for so long, and probably, you know, I don't plan to die, but if I do, I hope I'm in the middle of a coaching session. It would probably scare the people to death. But what I really enjoy is helping businesses, large and small businesses, get the clarity necessary to improve their lives. Because my job as a good business coach isn't to do it for them. It's to help you make better decisions, have that aha moment that will drastically and immensely grow your business almost immediately. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you stories all day where that's happened. But one of the things that I do is I have a process of where, and it's based on some of my mentors that I mentioned earlier, that they've always said that, see, I believe I can coach as a business coach. I can coach anybody in any country, anywhere in the world, in any economic condition, and any type of business. And the reason I do is when I was taught by these mentors was that there's a foundational recipe for success. And that recipe has foundational group of ingredients to it. And those ingredients include something that's near and dear to your heart because of your work is time management. I believe there's another element of that that I call priority management, that where you have to, the higher you get in leadership, you really need to understand what is the highest priorities, that if I don't do this, there's huge consequences tied to it. And then once I understand those things, then I can tie time around it to get those high consequence things done. But it's time priority management. It's goal setting. You know, 97 to 98% of our world has no written goals. That's why 2% of the world that has written goals will control about 98% of all income in the world. You know, but so goal setting, and it's amazing. I'm on week 8 with one of the executives I'm working right now, just doing goal setting. It's not something that's flippant. So we do that, and because I make them think. I make them think about, what do you really want? What makes sense? You know, Simon, as a quick side note, I think business people in the world today, people in general, have forgot how to dream.
Yeah.
People have forgot how to dream. So, you know, because it's all just the world is, you know, and if I can get them to dream just a little bit and step out of that comfort zone, but it, you know, it's goal setting, time management, it's sales, learning to sell. I don't care what kind of business you're in, or if you want to be an entrepreneur, or where your head is at, or what you've been told your whole life to think about sales, you better learn how to sell. Mm-hmm. And I have a course where I teach executives, high paid executives that haven't been asked to sell. I teach them how to sell, you know, and I think that's a foundational ingredient. Look, the key is that I believe is that you have to be a master. And I don't care if you have a PhD from the greatest universities in the world. It doesn't make a bit of difference if you haven't applied it. So, you know, one of my mentors used to say, you can pray all you want, but you got to get off your rear end and go out and do it. Babson College on the East Coast of the U.S. did a research piece on what made a successful entrepreneur. And they looked at age and income and family background and education and all that stuff. And you know what, Simon? There was only one thing that was similarity. And that was a willingness to step out in faith at some point. And all that means is, look, I've done all the training and thinking I can. Let's just go see what happens. And that's a process in getting people to believe in themselves enough to do that. I love that when that spark goes off as we go through the 14 foundational elements. And I've walked into a billion-dollar company, but we're going to go through the 14 foundational elements. Well, we're a billion-dollar company. I go, I don't care. Where our cracks usually are, where the opportunities usually are, is in this minutia that we don't have clarity on. So helping people achieve those things, because I'm telling you, once you get up little things, I work with one gentleman who had a $1 million business and it was going broke. We sat down and worked on clarity. And in 3.5 years, we were at $43 million in revenue. And I'd like to say I waved the magic wand and had pixie dust, but the bottom line was he didn't know what his numbers were. He didn't know how many sales calls were being made. He didn't know what his average sale was. He didn't know whether he sold 3 out of 10 proposals or 10 out of 10. So I literally made him look at those numbers in a very simple way every day. You know, so it's those simple things. And that's such a thrill for me to see somebody realize that. And literally, Simon, people can change their family tree if they just give in to working with someone like you or me that really understands. Because again, we mentioned it off air, I don't have to be an expert construction or dentist, or that's not my job. That's your job to be that. My job is to help people become more aware. My job is to help people have clarity in their business. And to do that, I'm telling you, those foundational elements of success apply to any business anywhere in the world. It doesn't change. So I can help them with that. And you can help them with that.
Yeah, we often talk, don't we, about people who resist change.
Yes, yes.
So have you got any examples of someone that resisted the 14 foundational elements and why you think they maybe resisted them?
Yeah. Well, you know, the company I just spoke of, they were a 40, 50-year-old company. This is the way we've always done it. Mm. They won't change because it requires work.
Yeah.
In some cases. But the other side, they just don't know how to do it. Mm. They're just lost. And so this is the way we've always done it, and this is the way we're going to continue to do it, and the heck with it. Well, again, I know that if they have that attitude, again, if you do that, if you run your business the way you've always run your business, I say you will be out of business. Because the key is adapting and changing. Just look at how marketing has changed in our world today. Yeah. I mean, when I was coming up and working in radio, we had radio, television, and newspaper to sell. That was your marketing choices, and flyers and things like that. Today alone, how many websites that sell advertising are there out there? Mm-hmm. There's literally millions. You look at television channels, you know, there's most people have access to 300 television channels. So how do you advertise using that? Well, nothing has changed except you've got to be more specific. You've got to have more clarity on, again, back to clarity. Who is your customer? I will tell you that many clients I work with have no idea who their customer now is. Who is your customer? Why do they buy the product they buy? Mm. How do they gather their information? Because my grandfather read the newspaper every morning. Most people today don't read the printed newspaper. They read it online if they read it, or they get just headlines. You know, how far will they drive? I mean, Amazon in the world, Amazon changed the world because they said, well, if you don't like the way you're being treated and your business is around you, buy it online. you know, we'll make it simple. People don't go there to shop. They go there to buy. Why? Because it's so simple. You know, so you think about the, you know, the reason people don't change is they're, most of the time, they're just afraid or they don't know how.
Mm.
You know, and they aren't willing to go out and find out how.
That, just going to add that, because if you don't know something, that's the clue. That's the bit that the possibilist would look at and say, okay, there's an opportunity here to learn something. But yeah, listen, I wanted to, we've talked a lot on this show in the past about mentors and the value of mentors, and you've mentioned one or two today. And I wondered what it was, if you are able to identify what it was that each of those mentors gave you, that would be great. But if it's nothing, if you can't get that specific, overall, you know, because you've had mentors that I've been mentored by through their books, but you actually know them. So, you know, share a little bit about your relationship with the likes of Brian Tracy and Zig Ziglar and John Maxwell, and, you know, what do you think you might have got from them individually, or, as they say, just as a group, collectively? Share a little bit of that insight with us.
Well, you know, I think in all of them, because one of my major mentors was my grandfather. He was a farmer, bib overalls, quiet guy, but I think about what my grandfather taught me almost every day. And he was big on a work ethic.
Mm.
And I'm telling you, as you probably know, the big issue in business today is nobody seems to want to work, you know, but a work ethic. And that was something that stuck with me. Mm. Some of the other mentors, again, that you might know and that you might not know at all. I had one that was kind of, I call a sales mentor, but the one thing that I remember that is Dr. Ken Greenwood. He taught me the simplicity of coming to an agreement with somebody when you're selling anything. You know, he always, because there was a time where trainers and such would come in and offer you to teach 40 guaranteed closes when you're selling. And Ken just said, look, you know, selling something should be nothing more than a conversation.
Mm.
You have to talk and see if there's, you know, if I can solve some of the needs you have and you know, and share, then it just makes sense. We work together. So it's making it a conversation rather than, and then others have taught me the power of listening, you know, of asking versus telling, yeah, you know, yeah. And I think whether you, it's a famous person or not, I think anybody out there that wants to learn and grow has more access to knowledge than ever before.
Mm.
But so many people, and you might have heard this, so many people have, I had a gentleman tell me at one of the seminars I did one time, and, you know, he goes, well, I'm not very interested in this today. I'm here because they made me come. I've been doing what I do for 40 years. And I said, well, I'll challenge you that. Have you been doing it 40 years, or you've been doing it 1 year 40 times?
Yeah.
Which means you learned a little bit, then you go the heck with it, and you know, you don't learn anymore. So, you know, and another mentor taught me the power of adapting, of really trying to understand people. I think the power of psychometric profiling, whether it's DISC or whatever it is you use. Because what that taught me is to set back and look at a person from what their profile is versus the person. I say, if you, and I think you actually look at people deeper into their heart when you do that. And so you're looking at people if from a very basic standpoint, I would say if you really learn this and learn the basics of it, you'll never meet another jerk. You know, because we all know people that we meet, we get in the car and we go, ah, what a jerk, I hate that person. Or you meet them and you go, I think we're related, I love that person. Well, why is that? That's because we connected or not. We're like opposite poles on a magnet, you know? So I think there's just a number of things, but every time you read a book or listen to a tape or listen to a podcast or this show, find at least one thing you can take away from it and go, boy, that makes sense. I'm going to do this. I know we're running out of time, but I always like to share a concept that Brian Tracy taught me, and we call it the power of compound interest. And I've used this, and it's very powerful, and I'll share with the listeners. If you try to improve yourself, improve your thinking by 0.1% a day. Now that sounds, well, that's easy. Well, it's not. It's the hardest thing you'll ever do. But what is improving 0.1%? I mean, might be right reading one more chapter of a book. That might be walking one more block if you're out exercising. What does that mean? But if you do that every day, over a year, that's about 35% growth. Over 5 years compounded, it's 1,000% growth.
Yeah.
You know, so what can you do to improve your thinking by 0.1% today? And sometimes it's just by, I'm going to listen better today. Sometimes it's, I'm going to have a possibility attitude versus a survival attitude. I'm going to listen to what I'm actually saying when somebody says good morning. Do I say, yeah, sure? Or do I say, you're absolutely right. It's a great day. What are you, you know, you start watching yourself. So find one thing and make that difference, because possibilities are there. And even if you're not where you want to be, you've got to think possibilities. What do you have? What is versus what could be in the problem? And if you do, you have the possibility over a 5-year period to grow personally by 1,000%. Run the numbers. I had a CPA run the numbers.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. I'm glad that I'm not the only person who says to people, you know, if you only think, if you only get one thing from this interaction. I mean, I do it because I like to set expectations, but obviously you do it because you've got so many different things that you can offer them. So, Danny, that's been fantastic. We are now going to explore two questions, because I'm surprised him with the request for some music. But I also want to know, Danny, is it a time in your life when you were experienced, you know, maybe significant big change in your life? And if there was, how did you get through that? You know, you and I, we're with clients all the time. We're telling them how to think and how they can get things done and all the rest of it. But in real life, what did that actually mean for you at that point?
Boy, there's been a lot of that. That's a great question. 5 years ago, I was going to Canada to make a speech, and I wasn't feeling good. I didn't feel bad, but on the way to the airport, I told my wife, I said, let's just pull in hospital and get it checked out. And before she got the car parked, they told me I had 48 hours to live, that my heart was dying, and that I needed a bypass heart surgery or I wouldn't make it. They said if I got on the plane, I wouldn't have came back. Wow. And so I think I did more soul searching in those few hours between me going in, because they had to do it quick. You know, laying there, you have no idea. You think, what's important in life? What isn't important in life? And, you know, I hope if anybody faces this, you don't think, golly, I wish I would have spent a couple hours at the office. You know, and what it came down to, you realize what is that the only thing I could do is call a few people that I had time to do and tell them I loved them. Yeah, you know, yeah. And so it came back to that possibility thinking. I mean, if you're going to go, oh, I'm going to die, or you say, you know, I'm going to make it through this, and I'm going to make some changes. And when I did, and some other things happened, 4 minutes after I came out of surgery, we called our family in Kansas, and 4 minutes later, my mother died, you know, and so it's all at once. And so I did a lot of soul searching. I laid in the hospital for 7 days. And what came out of that, I wrote a book about it. But what came out of that was I realized that from a business standpoint and a life standpoint, that everybody gets a second chance. But most people sit around and wait for someone else to give them that second chance. And instead, I realized very quickly that we have all the powers in the universe to give ourselves the second chance and the third chance and the fourth chance, which based on what we've been talking about today, that's possibility thinking, right? Yeah. But so much of the world sits there and waits for somebody to give them a chance when we have the full ability to give ourselves a second chance and grow. So I laid there. I should have bought stock in Post-it notes, because I'm writing notes and, well, how am I going? I'm going to do different. I'm going to exercise. I'm going to lose weight. I'm going to read more books. I'm going to spend more time with my family. I'm going to help more clients. You know, that's why I do what I do. I love helping people, you know. But we've got to understand that we have the power to give ourselves anything we can imagine. Anything we want. I don't care if you're a farm boy from the rural areas or you've come from wealth. I know wealthy guys who fail, and I know farm boys are billionaires. How much will you allow yourself to dream and believe in that and just move forward, step out in faith and make something happen?
What a fabulous story. Thank you, Danny, for sharing that with us, because I'm absolutely convinced there'll be someone at home that's going to hear that message and think, yeah, that's the same for me too. And like you say, so many people wait for somebody to give them a second chance when they can just invent a second chance here and now, literally like that.
Yeah, well, I named the book, and I'm not selling the book, but I named the book A Life Best Lived, A Story of Life, Death, and Second Chances, because that's really what it meant to me. So, but if that can help anybody listening, I'm telling you, I've lived it, and anybody can achieve anything they want. They just have to believe it. Mm-hmm. And they can't let the impact of all the stuff going on in the world push that dream away.
Magic.
And that's just as applicable to a personal level as it is to running a business and being a leader. Being a leader, it applies to, you've got to know the vision of the company. You've got to know your vision, and then you've got to be able to share it rather than, well, you know, times aren't good. It just doesn't work. So thank you. That was a great question. I don't talk about that a lot.
Well, thank you. That's been a real honor to hear that story. Okay. The next big one. This is obviously the most important question of the whole interview, Danny. What piece of music inspires you, gets you jumping out of your seat?
Well, there's two that came to mind immediately. One of my favorite bands in the world is a band called Tower of Power. Mm-hmm. They're a horn section band. They've been around 50 years. They're just funky, but they do have a song called Knock Yourself Out. And I just love that song because that gets me going. You know, just knock yourself out, man. That just means get out and make things happen. Don't do anything halfway. Yep. And the other one is I know trivial, but the other one is Freebird. If you've ever, by Lynyrd Skynyrd, you know, it's the one everybody yells out at concerts. Yep. I love Freebird because it just represents, look, go out and fly, man. You know, don't hide in a cave and sit in a tree. Go out and just be free and do, forget about everybody. I always say success is easy, because everybody else is sitting around worrying about what might happen. And the ones who go out and go, well, let's go see what happens, they're the ones who make it, you know. Yeah. And that's a free bird. So that's a great question. I've not been asked that question before. So,
well, I'm going to go, if it's all right with you, I'm going to go with Tower of Power and Knock Yourself Out, because I've never heard this one. So
here we go. Boy.
Tower of Power. Knock
I've been
yourself
following
out.
Those guys. They just celebrated their 50th anniversary, and they're the hottest live show band I've ever seen. And if they're listening, God bless you. Keep it up.
<You know? laughs> Awesome. So here we go then with Tower of Power, Knock Yourself Out. There you go. That was Tower of Power, Knock Yourself Out. And I can see from your face, Danny, just how much you enjoyed that.
It's the best. Yeah.
One of those ones that's going to play in your head forever. Danny, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk
to you. Thank you, Simon. Thank you very much. Yeah.
And, you know, I really hope that we can get you back again and get some more insights, because I just know that there's at least another 5 shows in you.
Well, just ask. I've got probably 7 or 8 shows in me. So just, you know.
That's what I like to hear. That's what I like to hear. Lovely to meet you. And I know people tuning into this will have picked up so many valuable lessons today. So thank you for sharing those.
I'm honored, Simon. Thank you for having me.
So there you go. That was The Change Show with Simon Phillips and my very special guest, Danny Creed. Come back again next week and join us when we'll have another episode exploring how to lead change, both in our personal lives and in the world of work. We'll see you then. Take care.